It is Friday, August the 5th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Many thanks for joining us today. Coming up, President Obama on the fight against the Islamic State.
We're going to keep going after ISIL aggressively across every front of this campaign.
Also ahead, our national correspondent reporting on new poll data and the U.S. presidential race.
In a new CNN poll, Trump trails Democrat Hillary Clinton by 9 points and by 8 points in a new NBC survey.
And the president, that's for sure. Also, country music's favorite entertainer, will tell you who that is, Tony Bennett. Guess what? He's 90 years old. Hello, everyone. I'm Steve Norman. President Obama has cast supreme, extreme doubt now on whether the U.S. can trust Russia as a partner to end the Syrian civil war. Mr. Obama speaking with reporters late Thursday after a meeting with members of the National Security Council to discuss the fight against the Islamic State, sometimes called ISIL. The president's comments on Russia came within broader remarks on the Syrian civil war.
In Syria, as I've repeatedly said, defeating ISIL and al-Qaeda requires an end to the civil war. And the Assad regime's brutality against the Syrian people, which pushes people into the arms of extremists. The regime and its allies continue to violate the cessation of hostilities, including with vicious attacks on defenseless civilians, medieval sieges against cities like Aleppo, and blocking food from reaching families that are starving. It is deplorable, and the depravity of the Syrian regime has rightly earned the condemnation of the world. Russia's direct involvement in these actions over the last several weeks raises very serious questions about their commitment to pulling the situation back from the brink. The U.S. remains prepared to work with Russia to try to reduce the violence and strengthen our efforts against ISIL and al-Qaeda in Syria. But so far, Russia has failed to take the necessary steps. Given the deteriorating situation, it is time for Russia to show that it is serious about pursuing these objectives.
For nearly 2 years now, the U.S. has been supporting local forces in Syria as well as neighboring Iraq as they work to push the Islamic State terrorist out of their countries. Mr. Obama told reporters late Thursday it has been several weeks since his last update on the fight against the Islamic State.
In the weeks since, we've continued to be relentless in our fight against ISIL. And on the ground in Syria and Iraq, ISIL continues to lose territory. Tragically, however, we have also seen that ISIL still has the ability to direct and inspire attacks. So we've seen terrible bombings in Iraq and in Jordan, in Lebanon, Saudi Arabia, Yemen, and Afghanistan, attacks on an Istanbul airport, a restaurant in Bangladesh, Bastille Day celebrations in a church in France, and a music festival in Germany. In fact, the decline of ISIL in Syria and Iraq appears to be causing it to shift to tactics that we've seen before, an even greater emphasis on encouraging high-profile terrorist attacks, including in the United States. As always, our military, diplomatic, intelligence, homeland security, and law enforcement professionals are working around the clock with other countries and with communities here at home to share information and prevent such attacks. And over the years, they've prevented many. But as we've seen, it is still very difficult to detect and prevent lone actors or small cells of terrorists who are determined to kill the innocent and are willing to die. And that's why, as we discussed today, we're going to keep going after ISIL aggressively across every front of this campaign.
President Obama also noted that it's been a full year since the Islamic State had any operational successes in Iraq and Syria. Senior United Nations officials are warning plans to resume Syrian peace negotiations by the end of August are at risk because of escalating fighting between government and rebel forces. We got the story now from Lisa Schlein at the site of the proposed talks in Geneva.
After more than 5 years of war, the fighting, which has claimed more than 300,000 lives, continues unabated. The United Nations says only a political solution can end the bloody conflict. Deputy Special Envoy for Syria, Ramzi Ezzeldin Ramzi, says the world body is absolutely committed to bringing the warring parties back to the negotiating table toward the end of the month.
For these talks to be fruitful, I think the cessation of hostilities has to stand, has to be reinforced. And here, the United States and the Russian Federation as co-chairs are in discussion on that particular issue. But also, the humanitarian situation has to improve. Not much has been accomplished over the past month, largely due to the intensification of military activities.
The United Nations had hoped to deliver humanitarian aid to 1.2 million people in besieged and hard-to-reach areas affected by conflict in July. But the senior advisor to Special Envoy for Syria, Jan Egeland, says only 40% was reached.
And it is heartbreaking, really, for humanitarian workers that are ready with supplies, with trucks, with people who are willing to risk a lot to go to places, that we were prevented from reaching 60% of the 1.2 million that we had hoped to go to.
The United Nations describes the situation in Aleppo as particularly desperate. More than 300,000 civilians have been cut off from food and other relief supplies for the past 3 weeks, as Syrian government forces have tightened their grip on the eastern rebel-held section of the city. The United Nations has repeatedly called for a 48-hour humanitarian pause to allow aid to reach the beleaguered population. Jan Egeland says intensive diplomatic activity is going on to enable such an operation. He says UN aid agencies are ready to go into Aleppo as soon as a pause is enacted. He says the most efficient way of doing it is to establish a two-way corridor, one to allow people to voluntarily leave Aleppo and the other to let aid enter the besieged city. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And among the many stories we're staying on top of here on The Voice of America, a strong rebuke for human rights violations by South Sudan government soldiers, China battling conflicts in the health sector as the WHO raises concerns, and Pakistan brushing aside skepticism of anti-terror campaign. More on those stories at voanews.com and, as always, on our VOA mobile app. Turning now to U.S. politics, Republican Party leaders are increasingly concerned about recent national and key state polls that show Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton surging in a lead over Republican Donald Trump. The new polls come in the wake of last week's National Democratic Party convention and a series of controversies involving Trump that have sparked some negative reactions from some prominent Republicans as well as Democrats. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has the latest.
These are trying times for Republican Donald Trump, but he insists his campaign remains on track to win in November.
So I just want to tell you the campaign is doing really well. It's never been so well united.
In a new CNN poll, Trump trails Democrat Hillary Clinton by 9 points and by 8 points in a new NBC survey. He also trails Clinton in key battleground states like Pennsylvania and Michigan. The sliding poll numbers come in the wake of several controversies that have engulfed the Trump campaign, including his feud with Kizer and Ghazala Khan, the Muslim-American parents of a U.S. Army captain who was killed in the Iraq War in 2004. Trump's combative reaction to the Khans drew negative responses from key Republicans, including House Speaker Paul Ryan and Arizona Senator John McCain.
We not only have to respect, but love the family members who have made these sacrifices.
Trump also sparked a backlash for refusing to endorse both Ryan and McCain in upcoming primary elections. The controversies swirling around Trump have some Republican leaders worried that his undisciplined approach to the campaign is helping Clinton, says University of Virginia analyst Kyle Condick.
He's going to have to start convincing people that he is qualified for the presidency and has the temperament for the presidency. And I don't think that back and forths like this one with the Khan family are particularly helpful in that regard.
Trump told an interviewer in Florida he's determined to change the focus of his campaign.
Well, I think that's probably right. More focus on Hillary Clinton. She's a disaster. So we're going to focus more on Hillary Clinton, absolutely.
At a rally in Colorado, Clinton continued to hammer away at the notion that Trump's temperament should disqualify him from becoming president.
There is no doubt in my mind that Donald Trump is unqualified to be president and unfit to be commander-in-chief.
And the pro-Clinton group Priorities USA has a new ad that features Republicans criticizing Trump.
Comments that we've been hearing from Mr. Trump actually create a clear and present danger.
Both Clinton and Trump are well aware of polls that show Americans want change. But there's also concern about the temperament of the candidates, says Wall Street Journal analyst Gerald Seib.
I think there's a big desire for change. That helps Donald Trump. He's the change. He's the different candidate. Therefore, he's the change candidate. But I also think there's a parallel concern, which is a little bit of fear of the unknown. So where does this balance out? Desire for change versus fear of the unknown. Because Donald Trump is a very much an unknown commodity as a political leader.
Trump maintains an aggressive campaign schedule, including recent rallies in the key battleground states of Florida and Virginia. Republican leaders are hoping Trump will avoid distractions in the weeks ahead and focus instead on his message of bringing political change. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
And now it's time to see what's happening on social media. International Edition's G. Abby Lee here with the latest. Hi, G.
Hi, Steve. GOP nominee Donald Trump's wife is trending once again. This follows a report by Politico that noted some discrepancies in Melania Trump's claims of legal immigration to the United States. Earlier this week, the New York Post published a racy photo shoot of the Slovenian American. But the online buzz has little to do with the actual photos. It does, however, has to do with when the photos were taken.
Yeah, has to do with when the photos were taken. Why is that?
The photo shoot took place in the United States in 1995, consistent with a biography published by Slovenian journalists. But Melania Trump has said she came to New York in 1996, a year after the photos were taken. So Politico published a report stating that she may have first arrived in the country on a short-term visa, which doesn't allow her to work legally in the country. The photos were published earlier this week and Trump released a statement Thursday. She wrote, "Let me set the record straight. I have at all times been in full compliance with the immigration laws of this country." But the statement didn't indicate the specific time frame she arrived in the country. Nevertheless, her supporters expressed undying support. Here is one of the most popular replies to an image of the statement she shared on Twitter. "We believe you over lying criminal media, Melania. Hang in there, you'll be the first lady." Now to that comment, another user wrote, "How exactly will she be the first lady if Trump is losing, wait for it, in Arizona?"
And what's the reaction like to Politico's article?
Responses on Politico's Facebook post were more critical of Trump. The top comment reads like this, "This is exactly what I meant when I said that the Trump's many lies would catch up to them. This is only the start of all the lies that they have told and no longer can keep up with." Others pointed out the potential negative impact the development will have on Trump's immigration policy. One user wrote, "I don't know if she were an illegal immigrant, but if she was, that would only make it more ironic that her husband's signature cause is illegal immigration." Other media outlets like Bloomberg View have also reported on the inconsistencies. Melania Trump was born in Slovenia but became a U.S. citizen back in July 2006. Steve, back to you.
And many thanks to you, G, our own social media guru, G. Abby Lee. By the way, you can follow G on Twitter at G. Abby Lee. I'm there as well at VOA Norman, and our program, International Edition, can be found on Twitter at VOA_IE. This is VOA.
Democracy in action. That's what the U.S. presidential election is all about. Who's going to be the new president of the United States come November 8th? Tune in to VOA's coverage of the 2016 presidential election. Reports, expert analysis, and more. Professional, up-to-the-minute coverage that can't be found anywhere else. Right here on VOA.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program, Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. 2016 Summer Olympic Games officially open today in Brazil with football legend Pelé scheduled to ignite the Olympic flame. It is the first time the quadrennial sporting event has taken place in South America. Once that flame is lit, 16 days of indoor and outdoor competition will begin in 28 different sporting events. Preparations for the games, though, have been overshadowed by the Zika virus, Brazil's recession, an impeachment crisis, a doping scandal, and concerns over water pollution, vast unsold tickets, and infrastructure shortcomings. And despite a huge security presence, many athletes have been the victims of crime. VOA's Mark Brewer is covering the games and spoke with my colleague Victor Beatty just before departing to Rio about whether Brazil is ready for the games.
Well, that's a good question. You know, a lot of times, Victor, and this is my 17th Olympics, you hear a lot of things ahead of Olympics where things are not ready. This happened in Athens. This certainly happened in Sochi. And, you know, these things usually seem to work themselves out once the games start or shortly into the first few days of the games. That's one of the things you have to realize, that ahead of the games, you know, journalists are looking for stories to cover, and these are the things that kind of stand out. And then the organizers get aware of problems that exist and try to work on those things and try to make corrections. So one of the big worries for journalists this week, the International Association of Press wrote a story about the main press center and how there wasn't even very much food or drink that could be had by the journalists. And they were saying, oh, you got to feed the journalists. How are they going to work? So, and they even showed a picture of, like, even hardly any bottled water there. So I guess I'll find out what that's like tomorrow to see if that's improved when I get there. Hopefully these things will be improved once the games start. Of course, we can't know about Zika and how that's going to affect things, or if more people will contract that from the mosquitoes. Of course, people should realize these are the winter months in Brazil, having being in the southern hemisphere, so they certainly won't be as bad this time of year as they would be in the summertime. And I'm sure they've taken on an industrious spraying program to keep the population of mosquitoes down. I haven't heard from any of my colleagues yet. The mosquitoes seem to be a problem there right now.
One of the biggest sporting distractions, of course, is the doping scandal involving many athletes, many of them from Russia. There will be no Russian weightlifters at the Rio Games. Tuesday, the appeal by the Russian rowers was dismissed. Will Russia be represented at all?
Oh, yeah, they'll have athletes there, but there's no question about it that the Russians will not win nearly the number of medals that they have in past games, percentage-wise, or even where they will be in the standings. And, of course, you know, virtually their entire track and field team is not there either. So, that they were banned by track and field's world governing body, and that was backed up by the IOC. There might be a couple selected people from Russia running track for an international team, but you know, absolutely this is going to impact the medal standings with so many Russians being barred from these games.
That is VOA's Park Brewer on his way to Rio de Janeiro, will be reporting for us and speaking with my colleague Victor Beatty. The International Olympic Committee has approved 271 Russian athletes to compete in the Games. That's after a state-approved doping scandal put Russian participation in the Games in doubt. Meantime, Olympic officials have approved the addition of 5 sporting events at the next Summer Games. Those will be in Tokyo in 2020, that is, including a return to baseball, softball, and the introduction of surfing, karate, sports climbing, and skateboarding. This is VOA.
This is BizBeat.
A bag of herbs is added to a gin still, and then Johann Monig adds a wine spirit at his gin distillery in South Africa, which has become something of a gin-making mecca. That's according to Simone Musgrave, a market analyst at RCL Foods.
We have hooked onto the trend, the global trend of gin growing.
Musgrave says gin is the fastest growing white spirit in the world, and a plant known as Fynbos is giving South Africa an advantage.
We own that plant kingdom, and the Fynbos gins have really jumped out of the woodwork.
A new distillery opens every month in South Africa, which now represents about 5% of the world market. At Wilder Distillery, Christian Wilder says sales could not be better.
We're now already on a volume of 5,000 bottles per month, so it's a whole different league.
And with thousands of different herbs to flavor them, might be hard to get tired of gin anytime soon. For VOA's BizBeat, I'm Philip Alexio.
This is VOA's International Edition. Thanks for joining us. Well, who do you think the top country music artist is of all time? Could it be Merle Haggard, Charlie Pride? How about Willie Nelson? Well, according to Billboard magazine, it is George Strait, who affectionately is known in the world of country music as King George. Nikki Strong of VOA Music speaks now with International Edition Sarah Williams about how this country legend has reigned supreme.
Well, Nikki, this is a huge honor. So what criteria did Billboard use to determine who would be the greatest?
It was basically a numbers game. For the first time, Billboard compiled its country charts over the past six decades, going back to 1958. So they looked at the genre's top artists, songs, and albums and how they fared. So they were assigned values on how they were ranked on the charts, the length of the time in that position, etc. And King George, as we lovingly refer to him, had recorded 44 number one hits on the Hot Country Songs chart, plus an unprecedented 26 number one top country albums, from 1984's Right from Wrong to 2015's Cold Beer Conversation. So King George has ruled the Billboard charts like no other.
George Strait is also honoring Jim Lauderdale at the Americana Music Awards September 21st.
Yeah, he is. Jim Lauderdale is one of Americana and country music's most accomplished songwriters, and he's being honored for his lifelong contributions to Americana music. And George Strait, in particular, has recorded over a dozen of Lauderdale's songs, including Twang and Where the Sidewalk Ends. So basically, one legend will be honoring another.
In addition to King George, who rounds out the top five?
Okay, so number five is Conway Twitty. Number four is Alabama.
Oh.
Number three is Willie Nelson.
Uh-huh.
And number two, not surprisingly, is Merle Haggard.
Billboard also lists the biggest country album of all time and the biggest country song as well.
Yeah, so the top country album is one of my favorites. It's Shania Twain's Come On Over. Yay, Shania! And the top country song is Florida Georgia Line with Cruz. Now, this is funny because the song only came out in 2012.
Yeah.
So it really speaks to technology and the impact that digital sales has had on the charts.
You can also hear music from all of these great artists on Country Hits with Nikki Strong on VOA 1. Feel free to share your thoughts as well. You can reach Nikki on social media at @VOA_music on Twitter and VOA Music on Facebook. Thanks a lot, Nikki.
You're very welcome.
Cold beer, conversation, just a couple old boys, a little time well wasted. Trying to figure out life, trying to figure out girls.
That's George Strait's Cold Beer Conversation, like Nikki just mentioned. Well, American singer Tony Bennett has turned 90 years old, and all indications are he's not slowing down. In fact, his singing engagements are filling his calendar. But friends and family all got together for a birthday party for the music legend.
This particular day is the best moment in my life. Is the whole day has been magical. The whole world is showing up for me and wishing me well on my 90th birthday, and I can't be more blessed than that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, lots of people were there, John Travolta, all kinds of people. 5 years ago, on his 85th birthday, Tony Bennett performed at London's Palladium.
I've been singing 50 years now, ladies and gentlemen. I'll be honest with you, it's 60 years. But I love it, and thank you for being so nice to come by tonight. Along the way, I've had a lot of I love recording as much as I love performing, and I've had a lot of songs that became quite popular. If I may, I'd love to sing some of those for you tonight. Thank you. Julie Stein. Just in time, I found you just in time. Before you came, my time was running low. I was lost, the losing dice were tossed. My bridges all were crossed, nowhere to go.
Sounding pretty good, huh? Still sounds that good 5 years later. Many thanks, everyone, for joining us here on The Voice of America for International Edition. Always good to have you with us. For our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Jimmy Cook, I'm Steve Norman in Washington. We hope you have a great Friday. Now, a little bit more of Tony Bennett at the Palladium.
Love came just in time. I found you just in time. You changed my lonely life that lovely day. You changed my lonely life that lovely day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The international community is facing a formidable challenge in the Lake Chad Basin region in defeating the terror group Boko Haram, while at the same time helping those whose lives have been thrown into chaos by the group and are in desperate need of humanitarian support. In remarks at a UN Security Council briefing, U.S. Ambassador to the UN Samantha Power spoke of the horror she heard from individuals when she visited regional camps serving those who had fled Boko Haram's violence, the looting and burning of homes, the murder of men and boys, the rape and abduction of women and girls. A robust military effort against Boko Haram is critical, said Ambassador Power. The multinational joint task force, composed of units from Benin, Cameroon, Chad, Niger, and Nigeria, is playing a growing role in improving coordination between countries, as well as in planning and intelligence sharing. These efforts have produced important gains in recent months, including freeing thousands of hostages, destroying dozens of terrorist camps, and recovering around 75% of the territory Boko Haram once controlled. Ambassador Power emphasized that the military fight against Boko Haram must also include respect for human rights. Ambassador Power applauded the European Union and the United Kingdom for their contributions to the multinational joint task force, noting that the U.S. has supported the force with more than $71 million of assistance, including advisors, logistics support, and non-lethal equipment. She urged other member states to step up and support this critical effort. Ambassador Power stressed that in addition to strengthening the military operation, much more is needed to address the dire humanitarian situation. In the last 2 years, the U.S. provided more than $281 million in humanitarian aid for the countries affected by Boko Haram, but they remain grossly underfunded. There are 2.5 million people displaced within their nations and some 150,000 pushed beyond their borders. A key point, more than 90% of displaced people have been taken in by extended family members, a testimony to the goodness and altruism alive in the region, even as it is beset by Boko Haram's brutal evil. Now is the time, said Ambassador Power, for the international community to step up and assist the suffering people of the Lake Chad Basin region, to empower the good and defeat the evil of Boko Haram.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
It's for...